Iran has stated that if other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal do not fulfill their obligations by February 21st, Tehran will suspend snap inspections by the UN nuclear watchdog. The ministry says the move will be in line with the Iranian parliament's recent legislation. Why is the U.S. stalling on returning to the nuclear deal which it left, yet pressuring Iran to return to the deal? Is there a way to break this impasse, or will the U.S. miss out on this opportunity? Stay tuned to the debate.
Despite his statements during his campaigns, the new U.S. president has not revived the Iran nuclear deal yet. And in the coming days, tensions may rise, as Tehran earlier announced some more rollbacks as of February 21st. The move is based on a legislation adopted by Iran's parliament that requires the country to speed up uranium enrichment and end its commitments under the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It was on Sunday that the U.S. Secretary of State said in a tweet that, quote, "Principled policy is the best way to ensure Iran does not acquire a nuclear weapon. We raised the issue at the weekly presser of the Foreign Ministry, and the spokesman refused to comment on Anthony Blinken's tweet, but said the U.S. is still following the wrong policy of maximum pressure by former President Donald Trump regarding the 2015 nuclear deal.
Unfortunately, the new U.S. administration is still acting the same as the previous one. What happens today is not different from what was the condition before January 20th. We see that the maximum pressure campaign and cruel sanctions continue against Iran."
Khatibzadeh further added that the maximum pressure policy had failed and advised the White House to lift sanctions soon.
"The U.S. policy of maximum pressure against Iran had failed, and these policies could not continue. We think that if these sanctions are effectively lifted as soon as possible, the way forward will be smoother."
If within the coming days the U.S. does not revive the Iran nuclear deal, the Islamic Republic will stop the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol. It was in 2003 that Tehran signed an additional protocol granting access to the UN nuclear watchdog to inspect and verify the country's nuclear activities. According to the 2015 nuclear deal, Iran has accepted the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol in return for lifting sanctions. However, following Donald Trump's withdrawal from the agreement, the sanctions have been increasing day by day, and the Islamic Republic sees no reason to implement these protocols anymore. It has to be noted that Iran will still accept inspections based on the safeguard agreement. Although Tehran has clearly announced that it will not go back to its commitments before Washington removes sanctions, the U.S. is still dragging feet from returning to the JCPOA, and it may lose the chance as Iran will take another step to reduce its commitments. Humana Wadi, Tehran.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, journalist and author Daniel Lazar, joins us from New York. We also have journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas, who joins us from London. Glad to welcome you both. Daniel Lazar, let me first start with you. It's interesting the way that this news is being reported. You have on the one hand one headline and just a basic Google search saying that Iran says that it has told the IAEA of plans to end snap inspections. So this is indeed what has happened. But then you have other headlines: Iran threatens to block snap IAEA inspections. You can see that there might be a different take at the way that this is being reported. And basically, just to make sure we're clear, Iran has informed the UN nuclear watchdog about its plan to end the inspections given to the agency under that 2015 nuclear deal, and it announced the date by February 21, which is in line with Iranian parliament's recent legislation. It doesn't mean that the inspections are going to end. It's the snap inspections that are complementary that are going to end. I just want to make sure that's clear out on the table. So given that, what's your reaction to this announcement?
Well, I mean, Iran is its legal position is impeccable. There's no question that it has a right to end these inspections. The other signatories have all either pulled out or failed to hold up their end of the bargain. Therefore, Iran is perfectly within its rights in ceasing to maintain its obligations under the pre-existing treaty. I mean, it's very strange. I mean, Obama and Biden negotiated the treaty in 2015. All parties pronounced themselves satisfied with the terms of the agreement and how it was being implemented. And everyone agreed that Iran was was abiding by the terms of the agreement. Then Donald Trump attacked the deal as the worst treaty in history. Democrats said they were shocked. And then Trump pulled out in May 2018, imposed devastating economic sanctions on Iran. But now that Trump has been defeated, Biden is in effect repudiating his own handiwork, refusing to go back to the original treaty, refusing to remove sanctions until Iran satisfies other requirements. And this is completely outrageous. I mean, legally, the U.S. does not have a leg to stand on. And it's very strange that Biden is essentially turning his back on his own handiwork. And if I may say, the reason for that is obvious, is that America's two or three main allies in the Middle East, Israel, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, etc., would go ballistic or totally opposed to any return to the JCPOA. So the U.S. feels it has no choice but to go along. So the U.S. in many ways is a prisoner of its own policy, its own alliances in the Middle East, and therefore it can't go counter to what Israel and the Saudis want. In fact, indeed, Israel, if the U.S. were to return to the JCPOA, Israel has made it pretty clear that it would launch a military attack against Iran. And that attack, in certain respects, would be against the U.S., but the U.S. is unable to say no.
Right. So you pretty much covered what most of my topics were going to be. Might as well just wrap up the show and go home. No, but when you talk about Israel there, say, Mohsen Abbas, let's not forget when Iran's parliament passed this February 21 deadline and the limit to the inspections under the snap inspections, that was during the time, it was pretty much in that same exact time frame when Iranian nuclear scientist Dr. Fakhrizadeh was assassinated. And, of course, Iran, was rightly so concluding that Israel was behind this. So we have that behind what Iran's parliament did, which was to obviously lift the snap inspections. Do you think, given all that Daniel Lazar has said, that Iran had the right and is in the right to do this?
Well, there's no doubt that Iran has been in the right on the JCPOA issue right from the day it was signed. The fact of the matter is that Israel has been undermining that deal since before it got signed. They didn't want it to happen. It's a miracle that actually John Kerry and Obama and co actually even signed it. But some of us are suspicious that they only signed it knowing that they wouldn't be back in office terribly soon. And that these things get organized by the system and the mechanics behind the so-called presidency, that in fact the system, the U.S. system behind all of these political front men, if you like, is actually hell-bent on a very, very singular mission. And that singular mission is to make Iran bend its knee to world institutions, money lender institutions, the American institutions, the military arms complex, whoever you want to call it, the British, the Bank of International Settlements. You know, they want Iran to totally bend its knee, to bow to the power of these forces. Iran hasn't done that in an absolute way, and until it does, I'm afraid that deals like the JCPOA are doomed to failure. And of course, Iran has given it the maximum effort, in all its sincerity, to try to make something of this deal, even though I would say it was not in Iran's interests. Fine, yes, they would have had certain economic sanctions that would have been lifted from Iran had the JCPOA held, and there may have been some temporary alleviation of some of the kind of maximum economic terrorism or pressure, call it what you like, that they've been inflicting on Iran. But in the long run, what it would have done is it would have actually been quite detrimental for Iran, because Iran's own reliance on itself, its own self-sustainability, its own, if you like, internal discussion about whether Iran should have as independent as a policy as they have, or whether they should comply and collaborate with these kind of very, if you like, belligerent world powers and their interests. Well, the Americans' withdrawal from the JCPOA basically pushed Iran into becoming even more self-sufficient, and I think that's a healthy thing for Iran. And what will the Israelis want in return for Iran to pull out or to come back into this deal? What would they actually want? They'll want Iran to hand over its ballistic missiles programs. They'll want it to stop defending any regional interests it has, as well as basically nuking any chance of their civilian or their sort of peaceful nuclear program. Are those three, if you like, consequences acceptable to the Iranian people? Are they acceptable to the Iranian establishment? I certainly don't think in their interests, and I don't think the Iranian establishment is going to buy this Israeli pressure on America to bring in the idea of ballistic missiles and regional, if you like, reduction of Iran's interests.
Well, not only that, Iran's leader, Daniel Lazar, has stated that the U.S. needs to lift its sanctions, and then for it to be operational, the lifting of the sanctions, and then Iran will return back to the deal. It almost sounds very simple. And then there's some who are saying, well, who's going to blink first, or who's going to come in first? But there isn't yet a mechanism to, or whatever you want to call it, to make sure that this happens, for example, the U.S. to return back to the deal. What can facilitate this process, do you think?
Well, the idea of who's going to blink first, I think, is completely inappropriate, because the U.S. position is completely outrageous. It's totally illegal, and Iran's position is on firm legal ground. So I just I think that the entire world should recognize that it believes in international law. If international law stands for anything, then the world should recognize that that Iran is in the right. It has been harmed. It deserves restitution. In fact, I'm surprised Iran is not demanding some kind of compensation for the years of serious economic damage that it has sustained at U.S. hands for absolutely no good reason.
It has done that. It has time and again requested that also. But at this point, that could be something that they just haven't highlighted as much as they did before. So, Sayyed Abbas, we know the stance that Biden had during his run when it came to Iran, that it wanted to return to the nuclear deal. We can see that indeed is not something that is happening. And the clearest example was during that CBS interview, when the presenter asked about Biden coming back and lifting the sanctions, basically asking whether he would halt the sanctions to have Iran return back to the bargaining table, and then Biden said no. Is that something that Biden is going to now change, given the fact that Iran has set this deadline? Because this was prior to Iran and not making the announcement of the deadline. Do you think that stance by Biden may change?
I think it's highly unlikely. I don't think there's anything that the American government is going to do without the interests of Israel and its own interests as well in that region. And I don't think that it can really bring itself to trust Iran, because Iran has far too much political acumen, and it has far too much, wisdom and understanding about how to play the game, in that sort of region. And I think ultimately Iran is very clear that in order to be safe and in order to be secure, it must have a full defense weapons program, which is not interfered by outside forces. It's said over and over again that it has no intention of producing nuclear weapons. Ayatollah Khamenei has even issued it as a sort of religious edict in ways. He's constantly said that we are not interested in weapons that can mass destroy humanity. So, you know, these are assurances that the Iranian establishment has given, that they want this this nuclear weaponry issue to only be, you know, raised on the in the context that actually the Americans themselves are threatening the Iranians constantly with their U.S. bases surrounding every corner of Iran's geography. Israel, of course, has to be brought into the equation again because they have 400 nuclear weapons. What if the Iranian establishment was to turn around to America and say, look, actually, you know what? We're really not interested in this JCPOA agreement because you've got our main enemy, our, you know, enemy number one, other than yourselves, Israel, sitting there within a perfect capability to nuclear attack our cities, and yet you're saying nothing to the Israelis. They have these 400 plus nuclear weapons. They're not part of the nuclear proliferation treaty. They're not part of any, if you like, agreements on an international level, nor are they being pressured either by the Americans or internationally. So how come Iran, which doesn't have nuclear weapons, has no intention of making nuclear weapons, isn't indicating any capacity to make nuclear weapons, is questioned to the point where, you know, it's sanctioned economically in a most inhumane, barbaric manner. No nation has suffered the level of economic, if you like, sanctions that the Americans have imposed on Iran. Yet their view, right in front of the Americans' view, with complete nuclear arsenal, missiles pointing directly at Tehran and Iranian and other, you know, if you like, institutions and establishments in that region that don't like the Zio imperialist, if you like, expansionism in that region, the balkanization, yet Israel gets asked nothing. So I think Mr. Biden needs to have a little look at his friends in the Senate and in the lobby areas of the Capitol Hill and question why on earth America can't get out of the supposedly the most powerful nation in the world with the biggest military, with the most money in the world, if you like. Why is it so ransomed to Israel? Is it Israel that runs the policies of America, or is it something else? It's rather confusing as to why America takes such a belligerent stand and says nothing on Iran and says nothing to Israel about its nuclear weapons.
Right. Yeah, that has that is something that Iran has wrestled with time and again, Daniel Lazar. And now that we're talking about that, we should also mention how Saudi Arabia, who's been not only critical of Iran returning back to the deal, is through the French president, has relayed that Saudi Arabia should be part of the negotiations or included in the talks. And Saudi Arabia is concealing its nuclear program, not allowing any inspections, which this smacks of basically double standards. But let's move on to some of the appointments by Biden, if we can here, Daniel Lazar. We're looking at the special envoy on Iran, Rob Malley. We're looking at the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, Deputy Secretary of State, Wendy Sherman, not to mention John Kerry and Ernest Moniz, who are serving in other capacity in the Biden administration. I mean, if they all were sitting at a table, I don't know, let's say for Thanksgiving, then the only missing party would be Iran, because these were all the people who were involved in the negotiations. So you would think that it's all set. And they should, as you mentioned in my first question, in your first comments, that this team was the one that negotiated the deal. So they should come back to the deal. All the players are, practically all the players are there. Do you think that that in some sense is a positive sign?
Well, it is, I suppose it's a positive sign, but the situation has changed. U.S. policy has shifted to the right. It's become more hostile to Iran, as difficult as it is to imagine, given the level of hostility that pertained in 2015. And the U.S. is definitely determined to isolate Iran, to beat back its influence, to hamstring the government. Therefore, reentering the JCPOA is a lot more difficult than negotiating it was back in 2015. Robert Malley is a very interesting guy. He has been a critic of U.S. policy in the Middle East. He has accused the U.S. of actually siding with the religious sectarianism of Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states, which is of course true, and means that that Iran and its allies have been the victim of naked bigotry backed by the U.S. But Mali is coming under attack from pro-Israel and pro-Saudi forces in Washington. So we'll see how long he lasts in the job. But if he is given the boot, which certainly seems possible, then we'll know that the JCPOA, as far as the Biden administration is concerned, is completely dead and buried.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Daniel Lazar, journalist and author, and thank you, Seymour Abbas, journalist and political commentator. That does it for this edition of The Debate. From me, Kavitawa, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
Ya ayyuhan nasu. فمثل فاستمعوا له إن الذين تدعون من دون الله لن يخلقوا ذبابا ولو اجتمعوا له وإن يسلكوا ضعف الطالب والمقلوب.
O people, an example is presented, so listen to it. Indeed, those you invoke besides Allah will never create as much as a fly, even if they gathered together for that purpose. And if the fly should steal from them a tiny thing, they could not recover it from him. Weak are the pursuer and pursued.
يا أيها الناس ضرب مثل فاستمعوا له. O people, a parable is struck, so listen to it. إن الذين تدعون من دون الله لن يخلقوا ذبابا ولو اجتمعوا له. Verily, those whom you call upon besides Allah can never create even a fly, though they should all gather for it. وَإِنْ يَسْلُبُهُمُ الذُّبَابُ شَيْئًا لَا يَسْتَنْقِذُوهُ مِنْهُ. And should the fly snatch away anything from them, they could not take it back from it. ضَعُفَ الطَّالِبُ وَالْمَطْلُوبُ. Feeble are both the seeker and the sought. So the parables of the Holy Quran must be really listened to carefully, and you should take them into your consideration. And I previously mentioned that this parable, which the Holy Quran is talking about in this verse, is one of the most interesting parables of the Holy Quran. In the previous program, we concluded that the person who is helpless when he confronts a single fly, that person is not eligible to be worshipped. And these mushrikeen, or polytheists, have chosen something other than the Almighty Allah to worship. They believed in God, but they worshipped other than Him. And another point we talked about in the previous program is that we look at this small creature as something feeble, but yet we should not consider that as the feeble thing, since even this small creature, apparently feeble thing, can snatch away some things from us. Some Islamic narrations indicate that the idolaters of Quraysh used to plaster the idols that they had gathered and arranged around Kaaba with musk, mixed with saffron and honey, and around them they used to loudly say some words similar to term labbaik, here I am. And this action indicated their polytheism and idolatry, as well as the distortion of the saying of monotheists. And they used to imagine these worthless and low objects as the partners of the Almighty Allah. But flies came sitting on them, ate the honey, ate the saffron and musk, and moreover, the idolaters had not the power to take them back from the flies. Taking this scenery as an example, the Holy Quran is somehow reiterating the feebleness and inability of the idols and the weakness of the logic of the polytheists, and implies that the idolaters can see carefully how their objects of worship are under the feet of the flies, and they're not able to show the least defense from themselves. So, do they not ask themselves, why shall we worship these such things?
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In
this
series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
أنتم الفقراء.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
The objective of the Arabic word talib, the seeker, where the verse says ضَعُفَ الطَّالِبُ وَالْمَطْلُوبُ, the talib and matlub, seeker and the sought, the objective of these words is the same thing which was said previously. The former is the worshipper of the idols, and the latter one, matlub, is the idols themselves. Both are weak and incapable of doing anything in defense to themselves. With regard to this verse, some other commentators have also said that probably here the term talib refers to fly and matlub refers to idols, since the flies seek the idols in order to enjoy of the food stuff over them. So all in all, this holy verse strikes a very important parable, but at first it tells us and it warns us that we shall be prepared for this parable. One of the practical ways in preaching is to attract the people's attentions first, and then we start talking. And this is one way that the Holy Quran is teaching us, although it has had various and more instructional points in it. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Around the World with Reporters.
Ex-President Donald Trump has been acquitted in his second impeachment trial, finally closing the curtain on the nation's bitterly disputed election last November. Trump was accused of incitement to insurrection after a violent protest stormed Capitol Hill as Congress was certifying the Electoral College's selection of Joe Biden. Polls still show that around 40% of voters think that Biden's victory was illegitimate. Public opinion was almost evenly split regarding Trump's responsibility in the Capitol Hill protests and along party lines. The Senate vote's outcome was never in doubt, as a two-thirds supermajority was needed for conviction. The trial was surprisingly rushed to completion.
Trump's big sin, from the point of view of the American ruling class, is that he brought the pitchforks to the castle. And that's what the ruling class is, and the entire apparatus of status quo politics in the United States is punishing Donald Trump for, and wants to make sure never happens again.
Democrats now have to contend with an exonerated Trump who can run for the presidency in 2024. Conservatives may be permanently divided into two factions, and polls show that a third party started by Trump would be even more popular than the Republican Party. The final fate of the controversial Trump seemed to overshadow what sparked the violent protest in the first place, yet the question remains: how can massive and violent disputes over electoral integrity be prevented?
A, have an electoral system that people have confidence in and can have confidence in, which we don't have. But even more, hey, we're giving you medical care. You have medical care. Your rent is paid. You have a job. You have an income. You know, you don't have to worry about student debt. How many of those people are going to come to fight you over that?
Other questions remain, which are even more difficult to answer. Can a Trump-obsessed nation actually move on? Will Washington now focus on fixing the socioeconomic catastrophes caused by the coronavirus and lockdowns? How can this deeply divided nation heal? And when? And maybe, do they even want to? Given Trump's acquittal, many wonder if the impeachment trial ultimately did more harm than good. The Trump presidential era may be definitively over, finally, but the transition to get there was anything but peaceful. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Protesters hold a huge rally in Vienna's city center, defying a police ban on what's become regular rallies in Austria against the government-imposed restrictions to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Police put the official number of protesters at 2,000, but organizers said there were much more people, many of whom were forcefully barred from joining the bigger rallies.
Despite the police ban, thousands have been taking part in demonstrations like this over the past weeks. It looks like the arrests that have been made by the police during this time has done little to deter these crowds.
Many of the demonstrators said they were against the recently announced rule for older school children to take mandatory COVID tests and wear masks in school.
They have to test, they have to wear masks, they can't breathe and all this madness they have to do at school. And they have to stop now because they destroy actually our children. And the children, they are sick now in the brain because of all this madness going on here. And not because of the virus. They are sick because of the politicians.
Most of the protesters did not wear masks and were vocal in their dismissal.
There is no valid evaluation behind this. That the government can say this is the reason when we do not use it that we get sick. And this is absolutely nonsense.
Local media said protesters included high-profile members of far-right and neo-Nazi groups. Several people were arrested and at least two police officers were injured. The government's management of the COVID crisis has also been criticized by industrial groups who argue the restrictions are killing jobs, growth and wealth. For now, with infections still high, the government has decided to keep hotels and restaurants closed while reopening schools, shops and services. Homolesky, Vienna.
During a press conference in Caracas, UN Human Rights Envoy Alina Duhan spoke about her preliminary assessment of her visit to Venezuela to evaluate the effects of the U.S. blockade against the Latin American nation. The UN diplomat said that the ongoing humanitarian crisis hitting the Venezuelan people is a direct effect of the sanctions imposed by the United States. She remarked her visit was based on UN standards of independence, impartiality, and comprehensiveness. Duhan added that the unilateral measures implemented against Venezuela, its institutions, and assets abroad violate international law. She added that the sanctions implemented by Washington and its European allies also violate the rights of the country to respond to the needs of a people suffering from the consequences of the blockade. In this context, Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza pondered the statement of the high-ranked UN official.
As the UN rapporteur said, the U.S. sanctions are illegal and harm our country. So Caracas relies on the UN and many nations to legally fight against such sanctions.
However, some opposition figures blamed the Maduro government for the sanctions.
The Maduro regime is being punished by the U.S. due to its refusal to hold free elections. So Maduro knows what to do to get the sanctions lifted.
But legal analysts say that U.S. sanctions cannot be justified by any means.
No country can meddle in the internal political affairs of another country, so U.S. sanctions are criminal and Venezuela will strongly resist against the aggression.
The UN official has described the effects of the illegal U.S. sanctions on Venezuela as devastating. Although Washington goes on imposing sanctions on the Latin American country, the UN diplomat urged the U.S. to stop its harmful measures. Jesus Silva, Caracas.
February 14, 2011 was the beginning of an uprising in Bahrain that brought tens of thousands of people to the streets across the tiny island to call for reform. But the peaceful movement soon turned bloody when the Al Khalifa dynasty began to quell demonstrations with an iron fist. Backed by forces deployed from Saudi Arabia in the early months of the uprising and mercenaries from other countries, the Bahraini regime launched a brutal clampdown. The heavy-handed response saw scores of people dead, thousands arrested, and many tortured in custody over years. The unprecedented suppression drew international outcries. But those outcries failed to stop a kingdom that hosts the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet.
The United States, of course, wishes to keep that Fifth Fleet over there because as a result of the Fifth Fleet, it is able to destabilize the region and terrorize people in the region. And so it serves America's interest to keep this regime in power so that America's Fifth Fleet can continue to operate from there.
Emboldened by foreign support, the Manama regime dissolved the main opposition party, Al-Wafaq, in 2016 and put its leaders behind bars. It also revoked the citizenship of hundreds of people, including prominent cleric Sheikh Isa Qasim. From the Iranian city of Qom, the 84-year-old spiritual leader marked the uprising anniversary via televised address.
With time, we can see that people have continued their uprising and they continue to achieve their aspirations and their demands. And they have great aspiration in order to reach their demands, no matter how long it would take.
He said the uprising seeks to rectify the wrongdoings of the Al Khalifa regime. He noted that the Bahraini people want to take control of their own country. On the eve of the uprising anniversary, Bahrainis staged nationwide rallies, including in the capital Manama, and renewed their call for the downfall of King Hamad and his monarchy. The demonstrators also demanded that all political prisoners be freed. T.
10 years after the first wave of demonstrations rocked Bahrain, people are still hoping that their resistance would bring about democratic reforms, progress on human rights, as well as accountability for past and present abuses.
$2.3 million children under the age of 5 are estimated to be suffering from acute malnutrition, including 400,000 who could starve to death if they don't receive urgent treatment and humanitarian aid, according to 4 UN agencies.
We always hear that there are huge numbers regarding human suffering, but the problem is that we do not see any measures to address this issue. And there are great risks regarding children's health care. I think that the numbers are greater than those mentioned in the United Nations reports. We appeal to the donors to take measures that limit children's suffering mainly.
22% is the increased rate of acute malnutrition from last year's figures, which is the highest level recorded since the beginning of the Saudi-led war in 2015. The UN agency said a lack of funds was hampering humanitarian programs in Yemen, urging donor nations to commit to their obligations.
The United Nations has been talking about the humanitarian crisis in Yemen for 5 years, especially children, but it's only rhetoric. There is a clear reduction in the aid provided to children and women, so we believe that the United Nations aims through these statements to obtain more funding by the suffering of Yemenis.
Yemen is on the brink of famine and facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations, since the Saudi-led coalition launched a devastating war on the impoverished country some 6 years ago.
Despite the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the country, some believe that the UN agency's reports are aimed at pushing more countries to donate and fulfill their programs rather than saving the lives of the Yemeni children. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Since the beginning of 2021 alone, Israeli forces have destroyed at least 178 Palestinian buildings in the occupied West Bank, rendering at least 259 Palestinians homeless, including 140 children. According to a report by the Office for the Coordinator of Humanitarian Affairs in the Palestinian Territories, OCHA, the recent demolitions took place in mainly the Bedouin community of Humsa village in the northern Jordan Valley.
Israel is seeking to expel Palestinians from their villages and towns to first seize their lands and then build further settlements. It doesn't respect the UN resolutions, whether those of the General Assembly or the Security Council.
Israeli authorities continue with the demolition of Palestinian buildings in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Area C, which makes up 60% of the West Bank. The Area C is under Israel's full military, security, and administrative control. Lack of Israeli-issued building permit is typically cited as the reason for demolition, even though, due to the restrictive and discriminatory planning regime, Palestinians can almost never obtain such permits. Experts say demolitions serve as a key means of creating an environment that leaves Palestinians with no other choice than to be forced to leave their homes and towns.
What is going on is part of the annexation plan. Israel is after forcing Palestinians to leave their homes. Tens of thousands of Palestinians live on their private lands in these areas, and their presence prevents Israel from carrying out its annexation plan.
In 2020, Israeli soldiers demolished near 900 buildings belonging to Palestinians and displaced more than 1,000 people in the occupied West Bank. Israeli regime's demolition of Palestinian structures and the occupied territories is illegal, according to the international community. It's also seen as part of Tel Aviv's aggressive policies against the Palestinians. Palestinians living under rigid military rule and without political rights describe the destruction of their homes as a policy of ethnic cleansing. Mona Qandil, Occupy Ramallah.
EU lawmakers are not allowed to show images in Parliament, but one MEP broke this rule to illustrate the unthinkable suffering being endured by starving children in Yemen. The hearing was told that warplanes manufactured in the EU have been dropping Italian-made bombs on Yemen, including hospitals.
and French DCI company is at the moment training Saudi soldiers on how to better launch rockets into Yemen.
24 million people in Yemen are suffering. 50,000 are living in famine-like conditions.
U.S. President Biden has recently announced the suspension of arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the Emirates. We, in the EU, should ban sales of arms or any military equipment to the Saudi-led coalition.
Since the Saudi regime and its partners launched their war on Yemen in 2015, hundreds of thousands of civilians have been killed.
The Saudi-led coalition went to war to stop the prospects of peace, power sharing and independence in Yemen. With Western help,
just in the three-year period from 2015 to 2018, campaigners highlight how the EU sold arms to Saudi Arabia valued at €2 billion, while humanitarian aid to the country from the EU is less than €1 billion during the entire 6 years of conflict.
Stop arming Saudi Arabia because they are using these weapons to kill the civilians and to make a war crimes in Yemen. You know, regarding the United Nations, Yemen now, it is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world.
Even the European Union's top diplomat admits shortcomings.
Yes, the humanitarian and political situation in Yemen deserves more attention. Much more than the one we pay to it.
Lawmakers have just passed a resolution condemning the violence while calling for a greater EU response. Similar resolutions have been passed by the European Parliament before, but ultimately they are ignored when EU leaders meet here at the European Council. The reason for that, according to anti-war campaigners, there is simply too much money at stake. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The US detains oil ships is the slogans chanted by protesters in a rally held in front of the United Nations office in Sana'a. The protesters condemned the continued detention of oil ships by the Saudi-led coalition and demanded their release.
We hope that the new US administration would lift the blockade on Yemen, but unfortunately it seems it is following the same policy. Not a single liter of oil derivatives has been released over the past weeks. The suffocating siege has deprived millions of Yemenis of fuel and deteriorated their life conditions.
The fuel crisis has deeply impacted the health sector of Yemen, as major hospitals like Thawra and Sana'a are on the verge of closure due to lack of fuel to provide health services.
Our health sector is negatively impacted by the siege. Some hospitals have stopped offering services due to lack of fuel. Intensive care rooms do not work any longer. The siege is targeting the lives of our nation. We call on the world to step in and put an end to this crisis.
12 Yemeni oil vessels are still detained by the Saudi-led coalition, contributing to the humanitarian crisis in Yemen that is on the brink of famine due to the Saudi-led war underway since 2015. Yemenis blame the United Nations for its inaction against the Saudi Arabia's illegal detention of oil ships. They say the UN inaction contributes to Yemen's deprivation of oil derivatives stored on the ships. Abu Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Studies now reveal that child poverty jumped nearly 10% in 2020, meaning one in six children lives in poverty in the richest country in the world. The same study found that if Washington gave direct payments to parents totaling $85 billion, or just 0.4% of its GDP, the child poverty rate would plummet 75% and affect only 1 in 20 children.
The American capitalist ideology has a strong hold on everybody in every class. There is a set of notions that, you know, kids are poor because their parents are stupid or their parents are lazy and therefore they don't deserve it. Or if we spend the money to do something for kids, we're all going to go bankrupt. The whole country's going to go bankrupt. This nonsense is out there.
Congress is touting a plan to increase the child tax credit from $2,000 to $3,000 annually. Many note that's a refund for those with jobs and not an immediate direct payment to buy children diapers, food, school supplies, and other necessities. The extra $1,000 tax refund would cover only about 6 weeks of child care, as their costs have risen 60% since the start of the pandemic.
All of these things are happening to big swaths of the American people that are never represented on, you know, mainstream media to the world, never projected out to the world. And we can solve them. There's nothing that prevents us from solving them besides political will.
The discussions on child poverty come as Congress has postponed yet again a long-awaited round of major household stimulus, this time in order to focus on the second impeachment trial of ex-President Donald Trump. Last year, American-style lockdowns led to the largest annual increase in the overall poverty rate in more than 50 years. Many say the problem is not poor children or even poor parents, but the long-standing political indifference towards both groups. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
The clashes between the police and the government employees in Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. The security forces use excessive tear gas to prevent opposition-backed protesters who government fears could have besieged country's parliament. They demanded the government to raise their salaries by 40% to compensate them over massive price hike and inflation after Pakistan devalued its currency under an intense IMF pressure.
Tear gas and the lathi charge, that is really shameful because we are not terrorists. Our salaries should be increased, should be competitive because when Imran Khan government took charge, inflation rate, you can see 300% inflation rate has been high and increased during the previous 2.5 years. And we are still, the PTI government has not increased even 1% our salaries in the last budget.
The protests by the government employees disrupted the usual official business across the country at a time when the mainstream opposition parties joined hands against Prime Minister Imran Khan's government to oust him from power over alleged rigging in 2018's general elections.
We condemn the brutal violence in government employees. It is incredible to see such excessive use of force against the government employees. If they do not work in their offices, the government business would come to a grinding half. Will Imran Khan alone run the government?
Fearing the politicization of the protest, a better sense prevailed and Prime Minister Imran Khan's government apologized with the protesting employees of the government and finally successfully negotiated with the leaders of the employees' union to end their protest. The government has announced to increase a 25% raise in their salaries. The troubles for the government are far from over. The mainstream opposition parties are all set to start a long march from all over Pakistan to capital Islamabad next month. However, with the end of the protest of employees, the government has managed to contain the crisis from being aggravated ahead of a long march. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
In the limelight.
Nowhere in the U.S. experienced more HC smoke during the summer of 2020 than Portland, Oregon, where Homeland Security and Border Patrol forces deployed at least 26 such munitions against BLM protesters in July 2020. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Laura Jared, journalist. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Police Deployed Potentially Lethal Chemical During Black Lives Matter Protests. Stay tuned for the details, please. For $33, you can buy a Defense Technologies hexachloroethane, or